Welcome to the first of a two-part broadcast of the audio portion of a wide-ranging interview between comedy director and producer Judd Apatow and Pearl Jam. Apatow is the producer of many of the finest comedies of the last decade, from Anchorman to Superbad, 40-Year-Old Virgin, and many others. Pearl Jam is the premier American rock band, having sold over 31 million albums since releasing 10 in 1991. They're about to release Lightning Bolt, their first new album since Backspacer in 2009. It comes out October 15th. Before we get started, let's listen to one of superfan Judd Apatow's favorite Pearl Jam songs, Wish List. Pearl Jam with Wish List from the album Yield, one of director Judd Apatow's favorite Pearl Jam songs. Apatow, along with musician-actress Carrie Brownstein, four-time world champion surfer and renowned surfboard maker Mark Richards, and former NFL player living with ALS Steve Gleason, interviewed the members of Pearl Jam about the band's forthcoming 10th studio album, Lightning Bolt, to be released on October 15th. You can go to npr.org/music to see a video of our interview today. The band includes bassist Jeff Ament, guitarist Stone Gossard and Mike McCready, singer Eddie Vedder, and Matt Cameron, who has been the drummer since 1998. Judd Apatow begins.
It's fun to do this. It's, you know, this is a chance for me to talk about music. You interviewed me for Sirius Radio, and we talked about comedy. So it's kind of the inverse of entering someone else's field. It's going to get uncomfortable. This could get really weird and uncomfortable. But I'm excited that you guys asked me to do it, because it's just fun to get to ask you questions, just for me, so I could learn things. I don't care if this helps you sell records.
We don't either. We just want this to be fun.
Exactly. Because now, looking back, you guys, you know, made a choice not to chase all the press. It seems like it was like a great idea that leads to longevity, because we all watch these people on TV, and after a while, like, you just get sick of people. How do you guys look at that scale down?
A lot of it, I think, was Ed pulling back and saying, I need to, like, just recover from this situation that we just went through. And I think probably at that time, a lot of us probably would have went, this is what you're supposed to do, so let's just keep going, or else if you don't keep going, then it dies, or, you know. And I think going through that process with him and then sort of seeing the successes that kind of came out of us pulling back and kind of doing what we want to do, and maybe not succeeding right away, but still kind of growing this, our sort of, our life as a band kept growing, then we really started to see the payoff of not having, like, being patient with it and just kind of going, you don't have to do anything this year. You don't have to, you know, if we don't go tour every city in the world, everything's going to be fine.
Mm-hmm. Very few people, I think, have the courage to do that, to not chase it really hard.
And I think we started recording this record almost 2 years ago, so it's been a it's been a long process, but it's cool to want to hang out with everybody, you know, because it's not always that way.
How does it start, like, with a record like that? Do you have any visions for what you're going to do going in, or it's just everyone sits down and says, I've had some ideas the last year or two, let's all share them and start looking at
them? We just book studio time. We just say we're going to book some studio time and show up, we're going to do 3 or 4 days, and you go in there, and you go in at, you know, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and you just kind of start with one guy's song, and you say, okay, well, what's your song, and let's hear it, and you kind of work up a version of it, and you have the demo, and you keep it kind of, you know, you kind of keep the demo and keep the new version, and and then you move on to the next guy's song, and Ed will come in, and he'll hear stuff, and sometimes he'll throw what will be the basic melody and almost maybe even a lot of the words on something in 10 minutes, or sometimes he won't even hear it that first day, and it'll be, you know, a year later that all of a sudden he goes, oh, this is great. I never heard this, or this is, you know.
Is that a tense thing, the unveiling your ideas?
Absolutely.
To everybody?
Well, it's not necessarily tense, but it's, you know, everyone's got their little babies, you know, they're like, you know, and you never know what's going to happen, and you can, you know, if you love your baby, it's sometimes that's the worst thing you can do. You know, you've almost got to go in ready to, like, you know, take your baby's arm off one right off the bat, and, you know, or have somebody say that your favorite part needs to only happen once, or, you know, and that's a great process, but it's not easy.
Do you have to mentally prepare yourself, like, tomorrow's the day I got to play all my stuff. If they don't like it, I'm going to be pissed, but I'm not going to get pissed. I'm going to be cool about it. Like, are you past that already?
I mean, there is a thing that's changed for me. Like, I think I used to always think, I'm going to put the two songs that I think are definitely Pearl Jam songs at the front. Mm-hmm. And I do exactly the opposite now. I put the songs that I think have the most potential at the end and put the weird song at the front. And you just never know. Like, somebody will go like, wow, that's awesome. You'd be like, really?
Mm-hmm. And it's never know over in the day. The day you unveil your song, there's not this moment where it's either going to happen, or it might be over that day. Yeah. You know, I mean, it might be, the reaction might be so like, oh, this is, you know, what else you got? If you have a song that you want to demo up, everyone will demo up something with you, and then you never know. Yeah. You know, 2 weeks later, somebody says, oh, that's cool. I've been listening to the demos, and, you know, I really like that one. And
sounds like a comedy writer's room, like when you work for a sitcom, there's a head writer and everybody pitches jokes, and what most head writers do is, if they don't want to take your joke, they just don't acknowledge you spoke.
Right.
You're like, what if he said this? And then you just see the guy like eating his M&Ms, and he just doesn't even turn to you.
Silence occurs. Silence for sure occurs.
And is there a sense of patience about it, but, oh, this might take 2 years, or going in, it could take 3 months, it could take 2 years, and everyone's in just some sort of flexible headspace about it?
This last record, I think we expected to kind of go down, work on it for a few months, work on another few months, and basically be done with it. That's been our process, you know, and this is the first one where we really worked on about half of it, got about what we realized was about half done, and then a lot of stuff kind of came up, and we did a lot of stuff, and then realized to finish it, we still needed another half of a record, and it was almost like two whole, it was almost a little bit of making two records.
How collaborative is it on the lyric side? Do you guys ever read the lyrics and just go like, no? I don't know what you're talking about here. Like, is there a collaboration in that?
No, we don't ever do that.
You back off of that side of it. I don't know what, I disagree with you politically. I'm for wiretapping. I don't know why you're against it. But how does that,
you know what, though? He has said to me the last couple of records, like, if there's ever anything that you think is awful, tell me. You have to tell me.
Yeah.
And there was a couple of things in this thing I was like, if I was going to lose a line, you maybe lose that one. He's like, always tell, you know, he's so open to that. But he's so good at it. It's really, even if I'm not 100% like there with his perspective, I always go like, wow, that's poetry.
We've all written lyrics for this band over the course of the years, but it just seems that as the records, the longer we go on now, and there's only, you know, you're gonna put a record that's gonna like be 10 songs, it's kind of hard to say, you know, I don't want you to write, I want to write a lyric, and it's just, he's on a tear right now.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of words, I think. You know, you kind of want him writing as many as he wants.
That is Sirens, a song from the new Pearl Jam album Lightning Bolt, out October 15th. This is part one of 2 days of interviews with film director Judd Apatow and the band. Coming up, lead singer Eddie Vedder talks about writing. Judd Apatow.
When you started this record, did you have an idea going in, or is it something that just evolves once you guys start working? Do you have like any thematic ideas, or do you realize like, oh, the notes in my book are on certain issues, or that just happens?
Yeah, no, I look forward to trying it that way. Mm-hmm. I've never done it that way up to this point. It seems like it's all kind of whatever the music is dictates what it is. Especially, you know, if I'm writing the piece, then I can kind of form it to what starts percolating and whatever, but the working with the fellas, it seems, you know, whatever they bring, it'll just kind of say, okay, what, that's really what you're listening for, is like, what does this mean? Like, what is this, what are these sounds, or what is this rhythm or momentum of it? What does it kind of dictate? And I think the faster songs are easier, and because it seems, you know, modern day, there's plenty of aggressive stuff to write about. But, and then maybe the more atmospheric stuff comes, you know, real quick, because that just seems like a easy place to connect with, you know, or those are kind of things in my wheelhouse. It's the stuff that's kind of in the middle, you're not really sure what it is, and those ones become a little, those become a little more of a crossword puzzle, trying to line everything up.
Are you writing ideas actively, or just the song is the beginning of your process in writing lyrics?
It's pretty much the beginning. I just kind of know that if I get in a certain space, that just something usually lands on my shoulder, you know, and then it's just a matter of, like, you know, just waiting, and then, like, you know, and getting it down, and you can kind of manifest it to yourself, and just really, and in that way, I think it's more like bricklaying, or sitting at the typewriter and just doing things, and then you see what happens the next morning.
I think my whole process is wrong. I'm just stressed all day long trying to think of things, but it's, but that's, I can see why, just as a lifestyle, the idea of that your inspiration begins then, as opposed to, like, I'm usually just 24 hours a day thinking, why aren't you thinking of anything? Why aren't you thinking of anything? You're behind. You need to get it going.
Yeah.
Who's been most helpful to you, like, among your heroes in talking about this kind of approach to the music and to a long career?
I feel like I've been learning from everybody. And, you know, the other night I got to sit with Tom Petty for a little bit, and then, you know, there's Bruce and Neil and Pete and Roger and Kim and Thurston, and you know, it's all, you know, in a way you're so fortunate because you're working in something where you're it's a bit of a craft or whatever, but it's an endless learning cycle, and even just the instrument itself, or or moving to another instrument or something, you know, it's just endless. And you're just still fascinated by it, and you're certainly still fascinated by these people. So,
what age did you find Quadrophenia? Like, for me, that was the big record. I've heard that was one of the records that was the mind blower.
Yeah, it's probably about 13, 14.
Yeah.
It, for some reason, I just didn't feel like there's anybody I could relate to on the whole planet. You know, nobody at school, and certainly no one in the household.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it was like some guy from London named Pete, and he was like, he knew everything. And all kinds of stuff was happening in my life, so it was really just like a, you know, it was like a big, like the bridge with the planks covering a big, deep chasm, and the planks were just falling.
Yeah.
And it was just like, that whole period was just hanging on.
I feel like I had the exact same Quadrophenia experience, because my parents broke up in between 8th and 9th grade and had like a crazy divorce. They didn't actually even get fully divorced till I was in college. They fought. They were just, and they both bankrupted each other, just fighting with lawyers and fighting. And for some reason, Quadrophenia, even now I try to think, like, what was it about Quadrophenia that made me feel a little better? Part of it was that song, I'm the One. Mm-hmm. Which we used on Freaks and Geeks, because it was just exactly how I felt.
Yeah.
Like, no one is, how am I going to get noticed? Why am I being treated so badly? Why am I invisible at school? But I wasn't conscious to it for decades, like what it meant to me. Was that the main record that you had that experience with?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was a number of things, even though I was finding messages in like, you know, Split Ends and Talking Heads, and I didn't find like the band X and things like that until a little bit later, but and even Empty Glass and all those things, but. Yeah. Really, as a whole, Quadrophenia was the one that it just, if it weren't for that, it was like, you know, thank God the record store prescribed that drug, because that's what, you know, got me through that. And even though Quadrophenia didn't really offer any answers in the end, it was really just knowing that you weren't the only one going through it.
Yeah. I feel like it's like a parallel between people who become comedians and people who get into music, because when I was into comedy as a kid, no one was into comedy. There wasn't even like a guy to talk to about Saturday Night Live or Monty Python. Mm. I felt like alone with this weird interest.
Yeah.
And only when I moved to Los Angeles and went to college and met the comedians at the Comedy Store and the Improv did I go, oh, so there's like hundreds of people who like everything that I like, that want to talk about it all night long. I always thought it felt like the Blind Melon video with the B-girl. Like, that's what coming to Los Angeles was like for me. Like, oh, there, I wasn't wrong to like all this stuff. How is it, like, I feel like a lot of our comedy friends, like, there's like a moment where you realize like certain friends have figured out their mental state, and some of them have kind of calmed down and centered and evolved, and other people kind of spin out, and that we're all almost in a post-success mode of like, why are we? Because in the beginning, you kind of do it because you're crazy, like you're angry, you're trying to show somebody, you're low self-esteem, and it, like as a comedian, you go on stage because you so desperately want approval, you're kind of willing to risk rejection by hundreds of people who could hate you at a comedy club. But at some point, that kind of goes away. And then you start creating for a different reason. Did you have an experience like that?
Yeah, I guess you end up, I mean, I just try to always remember that, you know, where that initial spark came from, and like a pilot light, and try to make sure that thing doesn't go out.
Yeah.
Because there's a purity to that. There's the, And probably that's where most people that listen to the records are still coming from. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, I suppose some of it, you know, I'm sure some listeners are also in a post-success mode, you know, where they've got families now and they've kind of grown up with the group and still find things of merit in the music. And not only that, but they followed us from early on, so they still like to hear what's coming next, I guess, from us. But I think I'd try to remain conscious of that early, you know, the core nucleus of why you got into this for the first place, or that energy or whatever. And really, the songs kind of dictate, you know, if the song is something like, you know, Mind Your Manners or Father Son, that has that certain kind of edge to it, then it's like, bam, you can just go right to that place and it comes out pretty easy.
Mind Your Manner is another of the new songs from Pearl Jam's Lightning Bolt, out October 15th. More of the conversation between comedy director and super fan Judd Apatow on part two of this interview next time. There is a video of the conversation at the NPR music site, npr.org/music. Mind Your Manner.